Before I start, let me cite my sources here. So I used Wikipedia.com. I used a website called www.beatlesinterviews.org. I used the book, The Beatles Anthology from 2000, and Psychedelia, 101 Iconic Underground Rock Albums, 1966 to 1970. By Richard Morton Jack from 2017. So that's my sources. Let's get started. 1966. January. The words psychedelic rock are etched on the 13th floor elevator's business card. This was the first known use of this term. The Vogues released their second album titled 5 O'Clock World. The album features the hit 5 O'Clock World. Canadian folk singer-songwriter Gordon Lightfoot releases his debut album, Lightfoot. Country singer Jimmy Rogers releases the album, That Nashville Sound. Could not find a resource to support this, but the album's title may be a pun on the country music term, the Bakersfield Sound. S. Sergeant Barry Sadler releases the 45, The Ballad of the Green Berets. Wilson Pickett releases the 45 634-5789 Soulsville, USA. On January 3rd, Paul Revere and the Raiders releases their fourth album titled Just Like Us. Some of the hits include Steppin' Out and Just Like Me. January 7th, British band The Spencer Davis Group releases their second British album titled the second album. The album features the Jackie Edwards original Keep On Running, which gave the band's first number one, and the cover of the R&B standard Georgia On My Mind. Excuse me. On January 8th, Shindig makes its final broadcast on ABC with musical guests such as The Kinks and The Who. 2 days prior, the birthday of Elvis Presley is celebrated in the final Thursday episode of the show. On January 10th, The Byrds releases the 45, Set You Free This Time, backed with It Won't Be Wrong. January 12th, The Isley Brothers releases the 45, This Old Heart of Mine Is Weak For You. January 17th, Simon & Garfunkel release their second album, titled Sounds of Silence. 10 of the 11 songs were Paul Simon compositions. The album's highlights include The Sound of Silence, Richard Corey, and I Am a Rock. Richard Corey was published as a poem as well. January 19th, Simon & Garfunkel released the 45 Homeward Bound. On January 20th, the British band Pretty Things released their 45 Midnight to Six Man. January 21st, British band The Uglies released the 45 A Good Idea, backed with The Quiet Explosion. January 21st, Northern Ireland's Them releases their second album, titled Them Again. The album features the cover of Bob Dylan's It's All Over Now, Baby Blue. This was the last album to feature lead singer Van Morrison. Months after the release of the album, Van Morrison located to New York to begin a solo career. January 21st, the 3-day multimedia trips festival is held in San Francisco. The use of psychedelic drugs at the event became widespread and marks the birth of a coherent San Francisco psychedelic movement. January 28th, British band The Small Faces releases the 45 Sha La 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 Lee. That's a funny little quip. January 31st, Marvin Gaye releases the 45, One More Heartache. February, The Barbarians release the 45, Multi. Los Angeles garage rock band The Seeds release the 45, Try to Understand, backed with The Other Place. Oh. British band The Trogs released their debut 45, Lost Girl. Johnny Rivers releases the 45, Secret Agent Man. San Francisco's Jefferson Airplane releases their debut 45, It's No Secret, backed with Running Around This World. Running Around This World features a line about spending nights tripping. RCA Records quickly censored a lyric. February 4th, the Rolling Stones released the 45, 19th Nervous Breakdown, backed with As Tears Go By. As Tears Go By was released as a similar fashion as the Beatles' Yesterday, with a chamber pop with the string quartet for like a, like I said, that chamber pop folk, chamber pop baroque sound. Yeah. February 6th, British band The Animals appear a fifth time on Ed Sullivan's show to perform the iconic Vietnam anthem hit, We Gotta Get Out of This Place. February 10th, a review of the 13th Floor Elevators gig in a local Texan newspaper dons a headline, Unique Elevators Shine with Psychedelic Rock. This was the first documented media reference to psychedelic rock music. February 11th, British band The Animals released the 45, Inside Looking Out. February 15th, the Walker Brothers releases the 45, The Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore. Also on February 15th, Otis Redding releases a cover of the Rolling Stones' Satisfaction. On February 17th, Brian Wilson starts working on the recording of Good Vibrations with the Wrecking Crew, which continues for several months. This marked as the beginning to the famed Smile Sessions. February 18th, British band The Hollies released the 45, I Can't Let Go. Paul McCartney once stated that Grandmaster's soaring tenor when he sings Baby Please was a trumpet. February 18th, The Supremes releases their 8th album, I Hear a Symphony. The album features I Hear a Symphony, and My World is Empty Without You. February 19th, 11 Spoonful releases the 45 Daydream. The intent for the song was John Sebastian was attempting to rewrite the Supremes' Baby Love. February 19th, Jefferson Airplane and Big Brother and Holding Company perform at the Fillmore West in San Francisco. February 21st, The Young Rascals release the 45, Good Lovin'. February 23rd, The Byrds record a second and the master take of 8 Miles High. February 25th, British band The Yardbirds released the 45, Shapes of Things. It featured one of Jeff Beck's great guitar riffs and perhaps most experimental. It was considered as rock's first popular psychedelic rock record, even though it wasn't intended on being psychedelic. Jeff Beck used feedback, which he learned to control by finding the guitar's resonant points and the bending of the strings. Music journalists call Beck's work groundbreaking and have cited its influence on Paul McCartney and Jimi Hendrix. Like all Yardbird 45s during the Jeff Beck era, it became influenced by early psychedelic bands. February 25th, British band The Kinks released a 45, Dedicated Follower of Fashion. February 28th, the Mamas and Papas released their debut album, If You Can Believe Your Eyes and Ears. Hits from the album include Monday, Monday, Go Where You Want to Go, and California Dreamin'. March, Los Angeles garage rock band Love releases their debut 45, the Burt Bacharach How David composition, My Little Red Book. Nancy Sinatra releases her debut album, Boots. The album features the hit, These Boots Are Made for Walking. 11 Spoonful released their second album, titled Daydream. Hits from the album include the title track and You Didn't Have to Be So Nice. The Fugs released their self-titled second album. British band Herman's Hermits releases the American album, Hold On. The album features the hit, a must to avoid. The Capitol has released a 45 Cool Jerk. Sam and Dave released a 45 Hold On, I'm Coming. The Mamas and Papas released the 45 Monday Monday. R&B singer Percy Sledge releases the 45 When a Man Loves a Woman. The Gollywogs, a band from El Cerrito, California, releases the 45 Fight Fire. In 1968, they gained success under another name. The Acid Test LP featuring Ken Kesey and the Merry Pranksters is released in San Francisco. The album's content and packaging are 100% lethargic. John Lennon records demos for what became She Said, She Said, which was clearly an LSD-influenced song. The story of the inspiration of the lyrics of She Said, She Said came from an LSD trip Lennon had. The Beatles and the Birds were hanging out at a pool in Los Angeles after Peter Fonda was at the pool and was clearly tripping on acid. Fonda kept coming over to Lennon and kept saying, "I know what it's like to be dead." In the song, Lennon featured the lyric, "I know what it's like to be dead." Originally, Lennon was going to call the song He Said, He Said, but decided to change the sexual orientation of the person. Los Angeles garage rock band Love releases their self-titled debut album. Highlights on the album include My Little Red Book, A Message to Pretty, My Flash on You, Hey Joe, Colored Balls Falling, and Mushroom Clouds. March 4th, British journalist Maureen Cleaves published an interview in the London Evening Standard with her friend John Lennon. The interview was titled, "How Does a Beatle Live? John Lennon Lives Like This." In the interview, Lennon made the following statement. "Christianity will go. It will vanish and shrink. I needn't argue about that. I'm right, and I will be proved right. We are more popular than Jesus now. I don't know which will go first, rock and roll or Christianity. Jesus was all right, but his disciples were thick and ordinary. It's them twisting it that ruins it for me." And that being said, as an end bonus, I want to read through the Beatles anthology book on, in their own words about the whole situation. George Harrison states, "Why can't we bring all this out in the open? Why is there all this stuff about blasphemy? If Christianity is as good as they say it is, it should stand up to a bit of discussion." And Paul McCartney states, "John used to know Maureen Cleave of the London Evening Standard quite well. We'd gravitate to any journalists who were a little better than the average because we could talk to them. We felt we weren't stupid rock and roll stars. We were interested in other things. And we're seen as spokesmen for youth." So Maureen Cleave's article with John touched on religion, and he started to say something that we all felt quite keenly, that the Anglican Church had been going downhill for years. They themselves had been complaining about lack of congregations. Maureen was interesting and easy to talk to. We all did an in-depth interview with her. In his, John happened to be talking about religion because although we were not religious, it was something we were interested in. We used to get a number of Catholic priests showing up at our gigs, and we do a lot of debating backstage about things like the church's wealth relative to world poverty. We'd say, you should have a gospel scene that'll pull them in. You should be more lively instead of singing hackneyed old hymns. Everyone's heard of them, and they're not getting off on them anymore. So we felt quite strongly that the church should get its act together. We were actually very pro-church. It wasn't any sort of demonic anti-religion point of view that John was trying to express. If you read the whole article, what he was trying to say was something that we all believed in. I don't know what's wrong with the church at the moment. The Beatles are bigger than Jesus Christ. They're not building Jesus enough. They ought to do more. But he made the unfortunate mistake of talking too freely because Maureen was someone we knew very well, to whom we would just talk to straight from the shoulder. was a mistake? I don't know. In a short term, yes. Maybe not in a long term. The gentleman in the States, when the bad news comes, they shoot the messenger, and they don't listen to the message, whether it be Christianity, Mohammedism, Buddhism, Confucianism, Marxism, Maoism, everything. It's always about the person and never about what they said. The Beatles press man agent, Derek Taylor, states the Marine Cleave article was first printed in the London Evening Standard back in March, but it appeared in America just before the American tour in August that year. John's comment about the Beatles being bigger than Christ was turned into a big headline in a teen magazine called Datebook. Brian Epstein was in North Wales, recuperating from Manila, among other things, because it had made him ill, and he got the message that the Americans were going bananas about John's comment, which was only one line in a two-page spread. Beatles producer George Martin states, it got picked up in America and reported on various radio stations and magnified, and the storm of protests hit the Beatles hard. Who do they think they are, comparing themselves to the Lord? Records were burned in public bonfires and banned by the radio stations, and it reached such a pitch that Brian had to prevail upon John to make a statement and an apology. George Harrison states, the bigger than Jesus quote wasn't really said the way it came out in America, where they took that one thing and blew it out of context. But the repercussions were big, particularly in the Bible Belt. In the South, they were having a field day. There's footage of the disc jockey who started all the uproar saying, come and bring your Beatle trash and deposit it here. We will have different sites all around the States and to deposit this trash, and will we be burning it? And the Ku Klux Klan were out there saying, we're going to get them. A road manager, Neil Aspinall, says, as the Americans had taken exception to the comment, Brian suggested to John that he record a taped statement explaining what he had meant and regretting all the fuss. Studio time was booked with George Martin, but then there was a change of plan. Brian went over to the States prior to the tour and made apologies, and in a press conference told promoters that if they wanted to cancel the show, they could do so. Nobody did. This was Brian Epstein's press statement. The quote which John Lennon made more than 3 months ago to a London columnist has been quoted and misrepresented entirely out of context. Lennon is deeply interested in religion and was at the time having serious talks with Maureen Cleave, who is both a good friend of the Beatles and a representative of the London Evening Standard. What he said and meant was that he was astonished that in the last 50 years the church in England, and therefore Christ, had suffered a decline in interest. He did not mean to boast about the Beatles' fame. He meant to point out that the Beatles' effect appeared to be, to him, a more immediate one upon certain of the younger generation. The Ringo states, it was a real mess in America because they took it the wrong way. We read it, and it passed us by. It wasn't blasphemous. It was a point of view. If we took it on the worldwide view, the church would still be winning. There weren't more people coming to see us than going to church. It was a valid point. We were punks and said a few things, but not to cause what it caused. It only did so in America because someone took that one line and shot it into the moon. John Lennon states, in England, nobody took any notice. They know this guy's blabbing off. Who is he? But over here, some lunatic gets his Klan mask on and starts running around burning crosses. And George Harrison states, although there was a big palaver, we got to America and held a press conference where John apologized under the pressure of the cameras and the press, despite the stress of having to deal with what he'd caused. He gave his apology or explanation. He got through it, and we decided we'll go and do the gig. Then Ringo comes back and says, we all had to pay for it, and it was a pretty scary time. John had to apologize, not because of what he said, but to save our lives, because there are a lot of very heavy threats, not only to him, but to the whole band. Sometimes you've got to take your cap in your hand and say, excuse me. John Lennon states, I didn't want to talk because I thought they'd kill me. Because they take things so seriously here. I mean, they shoot you and then they realize that it wasn't that important. So I didn't want to go. But Brian and Paul and the other Beatles persuaded me to come. I was scared stiff. I saw a couple of press conferences on film where I'm saying, well, what I really meant was I wasn't condoning that we were bigger than Jesus. I was just saying the fact that kids follow us and not Jesus, going through all this hypocrisy. And terrified, I was really scared. Even I doubted how much sense the whole article meant because I had forgotten it was that unimportant and had been and gone. I had to reread the whole article to make sure I hadn't said anything I didn't mean. I said we were more popular than Jesus, which is a fact. I believe Jesus was right. Buddha was right. And all those people are right. They're all saying the same thing. I believe it. I believe what Jesus actually said. The basic things he laid down about love and goodness, and not what people say he said. If Jesus being more popular means more control, I don't want that. I'd sooner they all follow us, even if it's just to dance and sing for the rest of their lives. If they took more interest in what Jesus or any of them said, if they did that, we'd all be there with them. The Ringo comes back and says, John did not want to apologize because he didn't say what they said, but what was happening around us was getting too violent. And so Brian asked him, and kept asking him to say something. In the end, John realized that he'd have to go out and do it. John Lennon quotes, I don't need to go to church. I respect churches because of the sacredness that's being put on them over the years by people who do believe. But I think a lot of bad things have happened in the name of the church and the name of Christ. Therefore, I shy away from church. And as Donovan once said, I go to my own church, my own temple, once a day. And I think people who need a church should go. And others who know the church is in your own head should visit that temple, because that's where the source is. We're all God, Christ said. The kingdom of heaven is within you. And the Indians say that the Zen people say that. We're all God. I'm not a God or the God. But we're all God, and we're all potentially divine and potentially evil. We all have everything within us, and the kingdom of heaven is nigh and within us. And if you look hard enough, you'll see it. Paul McCartney here says, we all discussed that we knew it wasn't really a big issue for us, but because it hadn't become so big, we couldn't deny it. I've never seen John so nervous. He realized the full import of what had happened. So he had to say, I didn't mean it like that. I meant I'm actually quite supportive, which people were able to accept as an answer, except in the Bible Belt. And John Lennon says, If I had said television is more important than Jesus, I might have gotten away with it. I am sorry I opened my mouth. I just happened to be talking to a friend and I used the word Beatles as a remote thing. Beatles like other people see us. I said they are having more influence on kids and things than anything else, including Jesus. I said it in that way, which was the wrong way. I'm not anti-God, anti-Christ, or anti-religion. I was not knocking it. I was not saying we are greater or better. I think it's a bit silly if they don't like us. Why don't they just not buy the records? It was part of an in-depth series she was doing, so I wasn't really thinking in terms of PR or translating what I was saying. It was going on for a couple of hours, and I said it just to cover the subject. It's so complicated and then got out of hand. When I first heard about the repercussions, I thought, it can't be true. It's just one of those things. And then when I realized it was serious, I was worried stiff because I knew what how it would go on, excuse me. And the things that would get said about it. And all those miserable pictures of me looking like a cynic. And it would go on and on and get out of hand. And I couldn't control it. I can't answer for it. When it gets that big, because it's nothing to do with me then. I'm sorry I said it for the mess it's made, but I never meant it as an anti-religious thing. My views are from what I've read or observed of Christianity and what it was and what it had been and what it could be. I'm not knocking it or saying it's bad. I'm just saying it seems to be shrinking and losing context. Nothing seems to be replacing it. It's no good going on and saying, yes, it's all fine, we're all Christians and we're all doing this and we're not doing it. I don't profess to be a practicing Christian. I think Christ is what he was, and if anyone says anything great about him, I believe. But I'm not a practicing Christian like I was brought up to be. I got away with it in England. Inasmuch as nobody took offense and saw him through me, but in America it went the other way. We forget we're Beatles sometimes.
You can't help it, and if you say something like Britain's becoming a police state, you say it exactly the same as two friends in a pub across the bar. I don't like supposing that somebody like Jesus was alive now and pretending and imagining what he'd do, but if he was Jesus and he held that he was the real Jesus and had the same views as before, well, Eleanor Rigby wouldn't mean that much to him. Paul McCartney here states, that was from that press conference that was in Chicago, August 11th, 1966, that whole John Lennon comment. Paul McCartney says, we don't care about those who don't like us because of the statement. We'd rather perform for people who do like us. We found out that the guy who started it, did it purely as an unashamed publicity stunt. John Lennon states, it doesn't matter about people not liking our records or not liking the way we look or what we say. They're entitled not to like us, and we're entitled not to like have anything to do with them if we don't want to or have to regard them. We've all got our rights, Harold. The Ringo Starr states, it shows us where people are at because they love you. But then when something like that happens, millions of kids start burning the Beatles records. There are bonfires of them, which was okay for us because later they rebought them. But we knew it was getting pretty rough. The repercussions were that we played a lot of places where people were getting really angry. The Ku Klux Klan were out in force, which was pretty frightening. There was always that edge in America. We knew that they didn't have guns. I don't think we could contemplate canceling on the tour. We never canceled anything. Brian would say, here you go, and we would say, oh, we're off again. I think we just moan. This is enough, but it was a routine. It's autumn. You make a record and get it out for Christmas. There were all these strange rules, and we'd keep on going, but it was starting get too much. It was building up to us saying, this is it. George Harrison says, with the stress and all the things we had to go through anyway, it was something we could have done without. There was a consideration that we might not bother with the tour because we felt we were going to get threatened. We thought we could actually pull out one concert in the South in Memphis. And in Memphis, there was a film of a guy from the Ku Klux Klan with his shades on saying, we have ways of dealing with this, but apparently the members of the Klan who were outside the stadium got chased away by the fans. So although we were feeling quite frightened, I remember sitting in a little minibus on the way to the gig feeling a bit scared. We did the show. Nothing happened. We got out there and that was it. And Paul McCartney states, by the time we got to the Bible Belt down south, there were people banging on our windows. I particularly remember a young boy, maybe 11 or 12 years old, banging on the window of our coach. If he could have got to us, I think he would have killed us. He was fired up with the Spirit of the Lord, and we were saying, no, we love you, it's okay. It made us wonder about touring in the case of how much of a good thing can you have, how long can you sustain things. Even every tour had gone great, marvelous, but we were becoming a bit fed up anyway, because we've been at it so long, and it's getting grueling, one holiday in after another, and other things were starting to happen, Manila, and threats, and people thinking we're Antichrist. John Lennon here states, we dare not to go out in the streets. We just stay in the hotel room until the car or coach calls to take us to the show. We miss an awful lot, but I suppose we will see it one day. We seem to have gone back every August as far as I can see. Like our annual trip, the longest tour we ever do is 3 weeks, and it's usually America where we do the longest tours. 3 weeks, if you're busy, it's all over before you know what's happening, and you're back home. And that was that. Let's continue. March 4th, British band The Who releases the 45 Substitute. Also on March 4th, Boston garage rock band The Remains released the 45 Diddy Wah Diddy. On March 6th in the UK, 5,000 fans of the Beatles signed a petition urging British Prime Minister Harold Wilson to reopen the Liverpool club, The Cavern, which is where the Beatles played before they recorded professionally. Mm-hmm. March 8th, Los Angeles-based band The Association releases the 45 Along Comes Mary. Tandon Ahmer, who wrote the song, was said to have stated in an interview that Mary refers to marijuana. It was unclear that Ahmer made such a claim. March 14th, The Byrds released a 45 8 Miles High. On March 16th, a live recording was made by the 13th Floor Elevators performing psychedelic material such as their song Roller Coaster. March 18th, British band The Spencer Davis Group releases the 45 Somebody Help Me. March 21st, The Beach Boys released the 45 Sloop John B. March 25th, British singer Jesse Springfield releases the 45 You Don't Have to Say You Love Me. March 28th, The Young Rascals released their self-titled debut album. Hits include Good Lovin', a cover of Mac Rice's Mustang Sally, and I Ain't Gonna Eat My Heart Out Anymore. And that's that. Thank you so much for tuning in to this podcast provided by Anchor Podcasts. I hope next time they have part two of this, which is between June 1966. It's very informative year. I already have I started doing the research already on that one, so yeah, it should be a good episode next time around. So until next time, thank you so much. Hope you enjoyed it, and enjoy. Thank you. Hey, how's everybody doing? It's the Mark and Aceto Podcast. Few weeks, but I'm back. Today's podcast is going to be part of the series I'm doing. It's been a while since I've done that too, actually. So right now I'm going to do part one of A History of Music 1966, and I'm going to talk about the events between the months January to March, and that's it for this one. Then of course go from there, you know, April, whatever, and all that. So last time I did this music
series I'm doing. I haven't did it. I think it was just before the whole pandemic started, or around the time maybe when it did start. But it was like an early process of it, and no one was really quarantined yet. And, you know, I think it was a week before the last episode of 1965 was out. I think. Anyway. That being said, there was actually some information from 1965 that I forgot to put on there. Like a page or two worth of information. But I guess it is what it is. I didn't do it. Oh well. Anyway, let's start fresh. January through March, 1966.